of you are conflicted? We do. We have a. There's a conflict in us. And we spend our lives trying to find a way to free ourselves of this inherent conflict that for most of us is a true enigma. Because after all, no one sets out in life to be a problem to himself or herself. Did you wake up one morning when you were real small and say, I want to grow up and really be a problem to myself? That sounds ludicrous. Nobody does that. But we wind up being problems to ourselves, and because we're problems to ourselves, God knows we are problems to everyone. How many of you know a problem? And all the king's horses and all the king's men can't get rid of the conflict in Humpty Dumpty. Why? Wouldn't you think, at least I would hope you would, that by now someone, somewhere, would have actually solved the question of this rudimentary conflict and provided a way for human beings to free themselves from it? Now, the fact of the matter is that has taken place, but the problem is that it isn't what we're interested in. What we're interested in, as we are now, is finding a way on our own to free ourselves from a conflict that we created on our own. Said in other words, what we want more than anything else is to try and figure out a way, and the expression, I don't particularly like English slang. In fact, I don't like any of it. But there's a phrase that came to my mind just now. Live in large. How many of you have managed to do that and you don't even have money? Live in large. Everybody wants to live large. Yes or no?
Yes.
Live in large. And you see, the thing is, and it connects with what we spoke of just last evening. I said that a man, a woman is born into this world, and there is something inside of them that knows that it is meant for a kind of greatness. It knows it. That same part of the individual that knows it's meant to experience and know something great, it also knows that it's meant to live large. And by live large, I mean live without restriction. And what happens is a twist gets made inside of the mind, which is so set up for it by the society that preceded its entrance into the world, that we've confused the idea of living large with the inherent need to live without limitation, the inherent need to have no limits at all. And I want to tell you something. This isn't motivational. I'm telling you that you and I are made to live like that, only we don't understand what it is that has to happen that permits that. Because for us, living large becomes something that we construe relative to our culture, our economic background. You know, for some people, living large would just be to have a one-room house. Do you understand that? They'd be living large. For other people, unless they've got, and God knows, what does any human being do with thousands and thousands and thousands of square feet? Some people, living large is have a huge place to live. Some people live in large as be the president of this or own lots of that, be a multi, whatever it is that a person wants to be. Why? Because the person set out and they envisioned, first of all, listen, they saw what they needed to be in order to be free, but they saw it from eyes that were looking at their captivity. What makes me not happy, what makes me feel like I'm not enough, what gives me a sense of limitation is what is the seed that gives rise to the large life that I want. And so I build for myself what I say is a large life. But there's a great mystery in all of this, and I want to touch on it before I get to the first story. Can you see, hopefully, that I cannot build a larger world for myself, because ultimately whatever I build from myself. How many of you can see and understand that to a degree? I want to build a larger world for myself, but the only place I know to go get material, the only thing that's possible for me to wrap my hands around, are those qualities that I have been imagining that the world offers as building blocks to a greater nature. And that building blocks of greater nature always comes in some way that's comparative. So that what happens, and this is key to the whole talk, so do try to take it in, that I think I've built something for myself into which I find freedom, but really I have surrounded myself with something. Only I don't know that I've surrounded myself with something. How many of you ever built a larger world in order to be free and then wound up being the slave of the world that you built? Well, that's not fun, is it? No, because why? Because I goofed. I goofed, boo-boo, do-over. And then what? Same thing. Over and over and over again. Because that's the nature of thought. So the key idea, number one, is to recognize that anything that I try to build for myself, that I build from myself as I am, is not an enlargement of my life, but a secret form of what will eventually show itself to be what it was when it started, which is an extension of myself. Now, with that idea in mind, take a deep breath, because we have a lot of deep work to do this morning. If I have a glass of water here, which I do, suddenly, I know I won't do this. And I threw this water out. I'm really tempted. And I threw this water out of the glass. True or false, that in the moment that I do that, that it is released, the water, into a world larger than itself. And there can be no exception to the rule that whatever is released from something is released into something larger than what it was released into. This is important. Can you understand that idea? It doesn't matter what it is. Whatever I uncontain, whatever I release, by the fact that it has been released, is brought into a world that is larger than the world that it was presently contained in before it was released. Do you have this in mind? Okay, because that's going to underpin a lot of what we're going to talk about today. So here's our first story. And by the way, every spiritual story, every truth tale, is a tale of you and me. Every character, everything that transpires, every element, literally, is a kind of representative of a part of ourselves. So that when you hear true stories, the reason that we love them, the reason that they're classic, when we do find a classic tale, is because we recognize instantaneously that the whole thing is very akin to me. My life is in that story. So here's the tale, and do remember, all of this is about us. A man, in his longing to find freedom, became a treasure hunter. We're all treasure hunters in a way, aren't we? And it wasn't long, as these things happened, that this man found someone who sold him a map. Anybody sell you a map? Now, the map was pretty darn exciting, because it said that it led to a place where a great chest held an unimaginable treasure. And this is what he wanted. Because why? Because if I get the treasure, then I'll be able to change my life. I'll build from myself whatever it is that I'm going to build from myself. And you know, for lots of us, and try to get this too, a lot of what we want to build for ourselves is a way to isolate ourselves from people that bother us. So how can I build something that I can have a larger life in if the task behind it, the purpose, is to actually keep people away from me? So I am enclosing myself no matter what I do, don't I, when I build to be free from others. A lot of hard work, which I don't have time to go through. You'll have to, that'll be your part of the story in the years to come. And finally, he finds this extraordinary treasure chest, beautiful, huge chest, unbelievable. And it takes a long time to monkey with the lock, and he finally throws the thing open, and he's stunned because inside this treasure, there's 10,000 gold keys. And first, he thinks, gold? I don't know, why are they keys? But then, gold. You forget the essential question. And he's throwing these gold keys into the air. You know, gold. And he's on his yacht, and he's got servants, and he's got people that answer the phone for him to keep people away that he doesn't want to talk to. He's got personal shoppers. He's living large when he opens his eyes. And he can't believe it, but three or four of the keys that he was throwing in the air, the gold paint's come off of them. Oh. Some of you were really into it, weren't you? Oh boy, don't miss a talk. God, now you tell me, did you ever find a treasure? You went and searched and made this, made that happen. And there you are, you're so excited, and then all of a sudden, she leaves. He changes his mind. The economy falls down. The business closes. The health news comes about something concerning yourself. One way or another, all that the king's horses and all that laid together, and there they are, the keys, and they're tarnished. And a great sense of disappointment, of loss. Loss worse than any other experience. Because why? Because for a moment I was living large. I was out there. I was free. And he can't believe it. So what does he do? You know what he does. Every key he goes through and he chips, because maybe it's just a little joke on somebody's part. Maybe somebody has a weird sense of humor and they threw five keys and they're made of brass. But sure enough, goes through all the keys, one by one by one, huge. All of them, nothing but lead and brass. And he sinks to the floor in despair, which is necessary. Because if he didn't do that, then when he was getting up from having sunk to the floor, and I better put this in, I need you to understand this. That which lives inside of you that wants the truly enlarged life, if we'll use those words, that wants true freedom, it must come to where it finally sees that it has never known the nature of freedom, and that the despair, yes, the sense of loss, the emptiness, that is an essential element in the further process of a person realizing what must take place. And our hero, he's lying on the ground thinking about all that he invested in this and all his time, and he pulls himself up. And as he does, there's just a couple little keys scattered on the bottom of the treasure chest there that he didn't bother to test because he'd run out of patience. But he looks closely, and it looks to him like there's a false floor to the treasure chest. False bottom. And his heart. What does one's heart do in a moment like that? I'm living large. I'm back. Yeah. I was gone. I hope nobody took a picture of me on the floor. But I'm back now. But you know what? I'm terrified. Absolutely stone terrified. Because what if it's not a false bottom? What if it's somebody really evil who did the key thing, who wants me to feel this way? So he stays there for 5 years looking at the bottom of the treasure. You'll see. Finally, he musters the courage to pull the floor, but unbelievable, there's a map beneath the false floor. And he's thinking to himself, this is how it's supposed to be. This is exactly how it's supposed to be. It's all falling into place now. False treasure, false floor, real map, real treasure. He opens the map, and it's the genuine article. By the way, he has no idea what the genuine article is. But he follows it, as one must, because step by step, one goes through a process of finding out what something isn't in order to arrive at something that truly is. Follows this map, difficult, more difficult than finding the first chest, I can guarantee you that. And when he finally finds the place that the map is indicating, it's this huge cave, and it's completely surrounded by vines, old growth ivy. I don't know if you've ever had a tackle with old growth ivy, but it is pernicious. It gets everywhere. You can't pull it off. So he's got to just sling with a machete for hours. Days go by, and finally he gets inside. And what do you think he sees? Two huge oak doors, metal all over them. And guess what? Big locks on them that look exactly like the keys that he left behind. Oh, God. No, it's worse than that. Because you see, there were 10,000 of them. Which key? And I got to schlep all the keys here. And then I got a monkey with every key. Maybe I should be in pest control. So he goes back and he gets all 10,000 keys, and he's worried that he may have lost one. And he comes and he spends the next day, he spends a lot of time, insert key, turn key. Insert key, turn key. Till, you know, the day comes where you just don't even want to try. Isn't that true? Isn't that true? Try to remember this is a story. I know we're having fun. Try to remember the importance of this is a tale of the interior life of human beings who have not understood the purpose of their own existence, but have rather ascribed to a path set out by them, before them, for them, through this world that never leads to anything except what this man is going through. So there he is, and I gotta get to the end of the story. Key, 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 disappointment, disappointment, disappointment. He joins AA. Well, what do you do between keys? You don't think that's why? Something has to soften the disappointment. Something has to make it seem like everything is all right. And at the very worst, I can hate myself for being stupid, for having spent as much time as I've done, key after key after key. Finally, the moment he has dreaded more than any other moment in life, and I tell you, this must happen to you. One key left. You seen that television show, Deal or No Deal? One key left. Now, what do you think he's thinking as he holds the one key? I've spent 42 years now searching for the first treasure, finding it, finding the next treasure, putting the keys in, going through the various problems at home that I had because my wife wanted me to mow the lawn and I wanted to be working with keys. Last key. Yeah, hand trembling, no? Look, if this doesn't work out, then what? He puts the key in, turns it, nothing. He faints dead away, literally. He faints dead away. He has come to the complete end of something. And when he awakens from his dead faint, full of despair, he gets up and he begins to walk away. And then, by the grace of God, a thought comes to him. An angel whispers in his ear. This is the truth. It says, wait a minute. There's something you didn't try. What? The voice says, you didn't knock. No, can't be, But that little part of him turns around, he goes back, walks up these huge doors, knocks, big echo, you can imagine. And he hears a voice from the other side, come on in. He reaches over, he never did it, turns the handle, door opens, walks in. True story. True story. Our quest, our task is to understand at the beginning as best possible what is this treasure that we are all searching for. What is this larger world that we feel compelled on one hand to work to find, and on the other hand find ourselves compulsively serving a part of ourselves that builds one facade after another in which we find ourselves not free but a captive? And how can those two conditions that are an inherent process of a mind yet asleep to itself, yet that within which lives a certain seed that cannot be denied, how do those two tasks, those two qualities and the outcome, how can they be reconciled? This is what we are interested in. This is what we're going to examine. This is what we're searching for, whether we know it or not, because until we understand the nature of what this larger life is, this true nature, this larger world, nothing can happen except that we build ourselves yet another world that we find ourselves the captive of. So the first question is, and all of us know this with our minds, where is the treasure? Kingdom of heaven was within. The treasure is within me. But where is it within me? Where is this kingdom that all of us have heard about, that billions of human beings have slaved, suffered, stole, and caused unmentionable suffering to others for the sake of pretending that they've reached and achieved something like that, that all others should live up to their standards, their measures of what that idea is? How does one go through all of that and come out a different kind of person for having found what you and I are searching for? And it begins, if you will, first it begins by the grace of God. It begins when, just like a spring seed is warmed by the first rays of a sun escaping the grip of a winter orbit, that gradually that seed stirs, and as it stirs, something takes place in the human being, and he or she, hopefully, although it's not altogether true, is powerless to stand in the way of that inherent wish to move from one world into another world. To move from one world into another world, from a world that is dark and contained, from a world that is restrained, into a world that is more free, into an understanding that is not harnessed to conditions and people outside of itself, but rather operates in a world that serves itself instead of winding up being the slave of others. So the first thing we need to understand is this following idea, and it's a deep one, so take a deep breath. True freedom is the fulfillment of love. True freedom is the fulfillment of love. Without the fulfillment of love, there is no freedom save a temporary freedom that the human mind prescribes to a place outside of itself that it momentarily enjoys the sensations of being identified with. The reason that true freedom is the fulfillment of love is because freedom has nothing whatsoever to do with the larger world that we imagine moving into wherein we are free. Freedom is not a condition. Freedom is not a place. Freedom is not found in a possession. The true nature of freedom is when, through the action of love, and we're going to describe this in detail, in that moment, a set of opposites, opposing forces, a divided mind, in that moment, it is brought together, it is integrated, and in that moment of integration that love alone can produce, there is the release of those energies. And it is the release of those energies by the new form that has been produced by the action of this unifying love. It is the new form that has the freedom, listen, that itself then becomes one of the opposites of another new form that is acted on again, yet by the same love, so that freedom and release are one and the same thing. The fulfillment of life is through its release, not through its captivity. We don't know much about freedom through release, because freedom for us is connected to some reality we have imagined by which we hold something that lends us freedom. When we think of freedom, we think of me on a yacht. We think of me admired by thousands of people. How about admired by my dog? That'd be a good start. Just anybody, please admire me. Just for that moment. Why? Listen, very important, because in the moment where I am able to make the world agree with what my idea of living large is, in that split second, my picture of myself and the world that I have created to move into, they are momentarily brought together, and I feel I'm affirmed. Oh, this is big. Please understand this. We take moments of being affirmed by the world that we have imagined for ourselves as being the same thing as the confirmation of the freedom we sought in that world. And I want you to understand something, that true freedom doesn't affirm anything other than the existence of love, which gives rise to it through release. Take a deep breath. I know I'm pouring out a lot of ideas, but it's necessary. And it isn't necessary so much that you understand every jot and tittle of the things that I'm saying. In fact, that's not necessary at all. What's really important is that inwardly you're willing to consider, you're willing to receive a new idea that by and large can't be argued. Because don't you see in this instance that anything that is brought into creation is brought into creation in a moment in which there is that which was, there is that which has acted upon it. And in the moment of what was is met by what acts upon it, something new is born out of it. And it is the moment of the release of what something was into what it is to be that is freedom, because any other form of freedom then becomes attached to what was created. And this is what we've done. Because of our present nature and the way our senses work, we are forever creating for ourselves worlds in which we will be free. Never knowing that we are making the world in which we hope to be free in the image of ourselves. And every world that we make in the image of ourselves ultimately winds up tormenting us. Not because there's anything inherently wrong in creating a world that we have imagined. That's part of the process of the keys and the discovery and all the things that are necessary. But when we reach the point where we see that what we have made of ourselves from ourselves doesn't bring to us the freedom that we imagined we would find within all of that, what sense does it make to go back into that same mind, that same operating system, and ask it to come up with something greater and more free than it did before, when all it can produce is what it has always produced? Follow? So let's look at this. I'm going to tell you another story. Take a deep breath. First, I'll ask you a question. What do you think it is that keeps us from being free, from, and connected now, from letting go? What do you think it is that keeps us from releasing ourselves? Listen to the story. Once upon a time, there was a handsome caterpillar. That's an oxymoron for most of us. Big caterpillar. And this caterpillar, he wasn't a happy camper. You know, when you have to balance all those feet, it's tough. And you want to look good. You think you're the only creature that's concerned with how you look when you move? Because why? There may be a female caterpillar. And I want her to see how I undulate. Because she can tell by my movements that I'm getting ready to live large. Yeah? Come on. We're all the caterpillar, aren't we? And then one day, and this is more than I can go into for reasons that one day, God willing, you for yourself will know the truth of. One day the caterpillar, we'll call him Harry, it's better than Spike, isn't it? One day Harry's hanging out on a leaf and he's feeling turmoil. Please listen, he's feeling a stirring. And right in the middle of it, Harry wakes up. Harry remembers that in a life before the life he was in, he was a butterfly. He actually remembers that he lived in a world that was nothing like the world that he was in. And his body was nothing like the body that he had. And the fears that he had didn't exist where he remembered, without being able to put dots and I's and all the rest of that. He remembered as clearly as he could possibly do it that he at one time had been in a different form than he was in now. And that everything about his life, the way it was connected to the form that he was in, but it was necessary in order to become the new form. And Harry began to give talks. Not because he wanted to, but because a few of the other caterpillars that he would hang out on silk strings with, they began to notice that Harry was not so afraid anymore. Because they were going through some of the same internal churnings, the disturbances, but Harry didn't seem bothered. And finally, after a long time, there was, you have to use your mind for this, you know, there's Harry on a tree and there's, you know, 5,000-6,000 caterpillars. And he's talking to them about something that every last one of them wants to know about more than they can describe. Not, and you better listen to this, not because it had become some cultural or some religious idea, but because he was talking to them about something that every last one of them not only was going through as he was talking to them, but each and every one of them had some vague recollection that there was some other life That who and what they were was not the whole of who and what they were, even though they couldn't know anything about it because all they had was a body with a lot of legs and spikes. And all they could do was crawl on the ground and be afraid of birds and bugs. And basically, let me tell you what Harry taught. He said, our reason for being on earth, he would say, is to change into something altogether new. It is not to cling to what cannot be a part of that new life to come. That's basically all he said. And what he was trying to instruct them was, is that if we can understand that the purpose of this life, of each and every one of our lives, is to permit life to change us, to permit something to act upon us, if we will do that, then we wouldn't, if we would do that because we understand that. And this is where all the difficulty is. Look, no one has a problem doing that which they have done before because they have seen in doing it they get what they want out of it. But when life comes and it says, here's something that you must go through, and I have no clue why I must go through it or what it's for because I have no experience outside of being a caterpillar, then in that moment, anything that I'm asked to go through that isn't part of what my mind can conceive and build for me in some time and place, I don't want anything to do with it because it is a disturbance. It is something that has come into me that shouldn't be there. Why do I know that? Because I don't know what it is. And I always tell myself what it is after I'm able to identify it by aligning myself with some past experience that's similar to that. And then I feel better because I'm in control again. But Harry was trying to tell them, look, if you will not resist the changes that come in life that are driving this change in us, if you won't resist the changes that are coming that are driving this change in us, then the changes that are coming to us will do what they are intended to do. And now back to us, we understanding that would begin to welcome everything that takes place because we would see it as part of a greater good that is working within us for a greater world to be discovered by us. Look, every person, and I know this is true, how many, no more problems. Yes or no? No more problems. If you're going to look like that, I'm going to have a drink. No more problems. If you're going to look like that, I'm going to make enough money so I don't have to look at you. If you're going to do that, I'm going to find some place where what you're doing can't touch me. Do you know that there's no such place on earth? There is no such place on earth, but there is such a place within yourself that not only can't be touched by that in a negative fashion, but for having discovered changes that which you are trying to escape now. Difficult problems, that which life brings to us and stirs in us, difficult problems are actually divine passages. Difficult problems are actually divine passages. They are moments in which, and only in which, certain conditions have come together for the purpose of an individual, given that he or she is capable of doing it, of understanding the following idea. So take a deep breath because it's a big one. Let me ask a question. How many would like to change your nature, but going through the effects that one has to do, not so good? This is why you can lose weight while you sleep. Why? Because, see, I want to change, but I don't want to go through anything. And if I have to go through something, I want it to be really good. I mean, I can't stand my life. I don't tell many people about it, but in my, I can't stand what I'm doing, where I live. Most of the people around me, I just tolerate them. They tolerate me. Fact is, I want to change. But every time I get ready to even think about change, something comes along and slams me on the head, and it says, nuh-uh. And then I begin to feel a whole host of disturbances within myself that basically convince me that that cannot possibly be what I have to do. I don't want to go through what the disturbance is bringing to me, so I resist everything. Yes or no?
Yes.
I resist everything. Now listen, please. To resist any effect that life has produced in us, to resist any effect that we are asked to go through, is to refuse to change. To resist the effect is to refuse to change. There's an axiom here. I'm going to tell it to you. You can write it down and think about it. We'll come back to it. The only way that we can change ourselves is by joining change. That's it. See, we don't join change. We try to change what's changing. I don't want to deal with these feelings I have. This self-pity that continually comes at my door. When it comes, I know what to do with it. I put it in its compartment. I put it where I've put it my whole life, which is in a safety box filled with all of the ideas of why I feel the way that I do and why there's no other way to go through life except for that little plan that I've been building out there on my deck or whatever it is, where one day I won't feel like I do. And I want you to understand something that, and I'm going to go back to this. Remember, I said, where is freedom? Freedom is in the release of something. Freedom is in the release of something. Can something be released if it is resisted? Can't. Anything that is resisted ensures it'll never be released. Our problem is we've done 10 zillion things to try to release ourselves from that which we don't want. That's our problem. And we've become cynics, if nothing else, that there's no way to make this kind of change because I've done everything under the sun to free myself. In other words, I've turned every key in the door and the door didn't open. Now, we're running out of time too quickly here. Listen to the following idea. You must put this together in your mind in order to see the whole of what we're talking about. When a human being wants to bring himself, herself to the end of a problem, what is the seed the individual is working from in order to produce the change that he or she imagines? It seems to us that what we are looking at as we imagine our freedom is the new world that we're going to build for ourselves. But the fact is that what we are building from this seed is the sense of being a captive of something. Why would I look for freedom if I didn't feel as though I was a captive of something? So here I am and I'm looking for freedom, and I never think for a moment that the very self, the very order of myself that is pursuing this freedom and is as it has identified it, that very self is really nothing other than a secret effect of a certain level of myself capable of dividing itself into the one who's trapped and the one who's going to triumph. Never recognizing that as long as the one who feels trapped is designing the freedom and triumph for himself, then no matter what he enters into with that sense of being trapped, that nature that is trapped by its own designs. Can't escape it. And when do we want to escape that? Here's the point. Remember we talked about this? There's what we are being given and what we are being shown. Remember we said that? Life turns. Life changes. Everything. We are human beings. We are in one hand already made, and at the same time we are always being made. We are made already, and at the same time we are always being made. What happens to us is that we don't understand that there is this genesis, that we are always being made. Because we have taken the reins ourselves of this genesis where what we have made of ourselves and the world has made of us, That when things come along and they run into it and I'm shown for what has happened, this terrible fear or worry or doubt, in that moment, what is my attitude? No. I don't want what I have been given, and I don't want what I have been shown. Therefore, since I don't want what I'm given and I don't want what I've been shown, I will create for myself what I want to give myself. I create a new world for myself that doesn't have the unhappiness, that doesn't have the stress, the worry, the fear in it that my present world does. Never knowing that the present world that I'm in that I don't want, I created myself less than a week ago. Now, if true freedom is the fulfillment of love, and that freedom is not part of anything the mind can work upon in order to free itself, but rather is the instant in which these opposing forces are reconciled, and in their reconciliation, in their marriage, is a new life, then can you see the following idea from all that we have studied? Every moment of our lives, we are being stirred. There's never a moment where something isn't stirring us. To be a human being, to have a soul, to be in existence at all, is to be part of a continual stirring that is connected from the beginning to the end of itself, not in separate parts. And when that moment takes place and I feel in the instant this disturbance, what takes place? I hope you can follow this with me. What takes place? In that moment, there's me and there's what I don't want. Are these not opposing forces? Me, what I want, and that which I don't want. Now, the minute there is that which I don't want, take another deep breath. Can there be that which I don't want without, prior to that, there being what I wanted? It's impossible. You can't sit and say, I hate that, without knowing why. And you know why because you know what you love. So when I don't want that, whether it's your face or a feeling inside of myself, I can't experience that resistance unless there is something present inside of me that is working as an opposing force to the onset of that movement. These opposites, now listen, they're always trying to reconcile themselves. From my thwarted desire and the negative state comes the new desire. That which I'm going to do so that I never have to meet that moment where I'm given this and never have to experience again what I've been shown. I'm going to change everything because in the moment where I don't want what I have or I don't want things to be the way they are, my mind is capable of creating what it believes is the fulfillment of itself because it is a momentary and utterly false reconciliation of the state of myself. Do you understand that? Look, how many of you, you're feeling bad and suddenly you think, ah, south of France. Huh? Or, oh, well, this things couldn't be worse. Where's the Chablis? You fill in the blank. Is that not a way in which the mind serves to reconcile itself? In other words, produce a time for itself and a feeling for itself that is not part of the condition that's inherent in it. That which is stirring the caterpillar. Every time that the mind serves to reconcile itself through its own desire, nothing happens other than the mind becomes further ensnared in a dream that it's capable of freeing itself by its own considerations. The release comes when consciously an individual recognizes, here's what I've been given, here's what I'm shown, and in this moment I will do nothing other than let what is greater than myself, this awareness, I will let it reconcile this. We can't imagine presently that the very awareness that shows us the problem we are experiencing is part of the problem and its resolution and release. We can't understand that yet. We can't understand that there is a continual action taking place within us and outside of us, in which there is a never-ending series of energies that become forms that express themselves in these opposites, active and passive, opposites all the time, and something always modifying them, always releasing them from one form into another. We are made to live with the understanding that any time, and basically I'll sum it up like this. How many of you know that what is in fishing is called the catch and release program? Catch and release? Well, here's what we do. Catch and cling. Catch and cling. Instead of realize and release, we catch and cling. Here comes a pain, a fear, an old doubt, a strong worry. I'm with somebody and they say something. Or I've done something. How many of you have ever been talking with a group of people, and you thought you knew what you were about to say, but by the time you got done saying it, you knew that you didn't know anything at all, and now you know they know you don't know anything at all. And you walk away from that group of people, you walk in like, you know, suave bole, and you walk out like Mr. Stump or something. Why? Because you're so full of the feeling of being an idiot and have been seen by people for being one thing or the other. Now, what do we do with moments like that? Do we not take every one of those disturbances in ourselves and ruminate? Chew it and try to figure out what went wrong, how we could have been better, what's wrong with them because it was really not that bad. Yay? There's no release in that because the opposites have merely produced one more opposite. Self that is unhappy merely finds an explanation for itself, and nothing is changed. But when, and now we're getting to the final part of the talk, when we understand that the fulfillment of ourselves is in the release of ourselves. The fulfillment of ourselves is in the release of ourselves. What do you think rebirth is? See, no one knows anything anymore because there's so little truth on the planet. Rebirth is not some solid state. I live and die moment to moment. I am born, I create, I'm released. But it isn't I that releases me. You are trying to release yourself from a captivity induced by a mind asleep to itself. You cannot release yourself. You can surrender yourself to an understanding, a light, that by its already existence in you, not only reconciles the opposites, but produces the end of them and a new birth, and you are the endless participant in that act of love. That's what true genesis is. It is a never-ending state of something coming into creation, something being acted on by creation, and that which is greater than creation reconciling those two opposing forces into a new form that takes part in the dance at another level yet again. And that is what our lives are meant to be, and that is what living large really is. Because you, when you understand this and it lives in you as it is intended to, and it does, by the way, that's the whole point. It's there now. That is never not taking place. Our problem is that we have, and I believed I called it last night, this false genesis factor. That which tries to produce for us the escape from ourselves, which can never do it. Why? Because it's the problem itself. So it isn't a question of whether or not we have the capacity to do this. It's the question of whether or not we will become conscious enough of ourselves to see the absolute futility of proceeding down one road, and in the futility, at the end of all the keys, when one falls down flat, and then the voice says, "But you didn't knock." He finds out, she finds out, it was already there. You are that. The expression is not I, but Christ in I that lives. That all speaks to an idea of a human being finally finding right within the very center of himself, herself, that which is already eternal and already being created through that act of love. This is what allows us, if we're willing to go through it, to let people say what they say and thank them for that. Ever wonder about that? How do I love my enemy? You don't have an enemy. But Harry and his friends, until Harry remembered that what he was going through was necessary for him to enter into, and better put this in, to enter into. He can't remember. See, no one knows. You can't know with the mind. I have this very strong sense that there is something to come, something that is greater, but I don't know what it is. And so a person takes the disturbance, takes what life shows them, and the person enters into that darkness, because it is darkness to that person. It cannot be known by that person, but that same person, knowing that he or she can't know what to do other than to learn what it means to consciously suffer, to allow this disturbance to go on, not because I'm a great human being, but because I understand that everything I have ever done to make myself fearless, everything I have ever done to give myself strength, everything I have ever done to win the approval of other human beings, every last act has proved a lie. And then I stop lying to myself. I cut off my future that isn't a future in favor of taking part in the true present moment in which the genesis is occurring, so that in that true participation, I am changed. And I am not just changed into something that I then know. I am changed into something that is never not changing, because love is never not changing it. I hope that you've understood this.
Hello, I'm Desi Arnaz Jr. You've been listening to best-selling author Guy Finley. To learn more about Guy Finley and his nonprofit Life of Learning Foundation, visit guyfinley.org. That's GUYFINLEY.org. Receive helpful free gifts along with a host of life-changing information. That's guyfinley.org.